From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 5th day of March, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, out of the office, hosting the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana today. So no update of the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago. However, we will hear from Ed Usset, agricultural economist at University of Minnesota. I spoke with him yesterday about his discussions last week with those attending the Commodity Classic in Houston, Texas, their concerns as well, and then look forward with him to the end of the week, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report and the kinds of changes USDA may make in it. And then as we close out our time together, we'll go back to last Friday when I spoke with Nick Polson, ag economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois, about the crop insurance and ARC and PLC decisions that farmers and others must make by the 15th of this month. And we'll do all of that on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Ed Usset, agricultural economist at University of Minnesota, now joins us. Hi, Ed. Thank you for being with us. You were at Commodity Classic last week in Houston, Texas. I suspect you had some numbers you put together for the audience there, more than 600 at your early riser session, in fact. What did you tell them about?
Well, I'm only given about 20 minutes of time. And Todd, it takes me 20 minutes to say hello on a normal day. So I didn't have a lot of time to deal with. But I'll tell you what I did, and I did this for a column on, that'll come out in Corn and Soybean Digest. I got to thinking about this a couple of weeks ago. Our highest price so far this year in corn and soybeans came in the first day or two of the market in January, early January, and we have faded off, unfortunately, since then. But it struck me, I said, you know, a January high, how often do we establish our highs for the first half of the year in January? So this sends me on a wild goose chase. I go back 20 years. I'm looking at old crop prices and new crop prices, old crop corn, new crop corn, December corn, old crop soybeans, new crop soybeans, November soybeans. And I just took the January high since 2004 forward every month. And I compared that to the highest price during the April, May, and June period. And in old, I'll just tell you the bottom line here. In old crop corn, cash prices, think of the grain, the corn in your bin, your listeners. We established a high in January just four times in the last 20 years. In other words, the April, May, June rally found a way to take out that January high 8 out of 10 years. Similarly, in new crop prices, you take the highest price of December corn in January, and we took out that new crop futures price high in April, May, June in 17 of the 20 years. So particularly in corn, I confirmed this thought, this nagging thought I had. We don't set highs in January very often. I mean, it's just not a common thing. A little less reliable in the world of soybeans, but still two-thirds of the years, we find a way to go higher in April, May, June. Now, the question your listeners are going to have, Todd, they're going to say, okay, you think we could, yeah. Well, first of all, the first thought is they want me to guarantee that we'll go higher in April, May, June. And Todd, I don't offer guarantees. I don't offer guarantees. The second thought is what's going to make prices go higher? And you know what? I don't know. Every year we got something different happening. And if I could give you the five top reasons why prices might go higher in the months ahead, it'll be a sixth reason that makes it happen. You know, but I guess for people holding old crop grain in the bin, or who have been reluctant to price new crop so far, do I think you're going to get another shot in the months ahead? And my thought is, yes. Can I guarantee it? No, but I think we're going to get another shot.
How worried were they at Commodity Classic compared to previous years?
Well, they're worried. This is the first 2 months of the year have been, I mean, good grief, that January was a bad month, and we were just picking up steam going into February. February was even worse. I don't think there's panic. I will say there's an awful lot of corn, old crop corn, being held in storage. We need a rally to move that.
How much of a rally do you think farmers will want before they actually decide to move it?
The funny thing with the producers, of course, Todd, is if we get a 30-cent rally, we're going to wait for another 30 cents. It's human nature. But I think somewhere in the 30 to 50 cent rally in the board will move some grain. My greatest concern is part of that rally will disappear on a softening basis because it's going to become easier for buyers to buy cash grain. So don't be surprised if we get a rally of note, 30, 40, 50 cents. We've already had 10 to 20 cent rally in the last week. If we get another 10, 20, 30 cents, don't be surprised if your basis backs off a little bit.
We have asked this question and talked a little bit on the air from time to time about the planting season time frame. The rally may come during that. Mm-hmm. Should farmers have themselves prepared to move grain at that point, and whether that means getting it to the elevator or in some other form, making sure that they logistically can manage it?
Yeah, they have to be. Spring, I know there's a lot going on. You want to get the crop planted, other issues around getting that new crop in. But that rally shows up. Let's not forget to get something done. Let's make it a priority to get something done when the opportunity shows up.
It is hard to sell two crops at once. Should they be willing to do so for both corn and soybeans?
I think, I get the distinct sense that a lot of last year's crop is unsold and not much of this year's coming crop is sold. We better be willing to be a little more aggressive on both ends. We got a lot of selling to do.
Finally, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report is due out from the United States Department of Agriculture on Friday at 11 o'clock Central Time. Those numbers will be on our website at willag.org not long after that. What are the expectations of the trade or from you as it particularly relates to the size of the crops coming out of South America?
I get the sense that we're still trying to talk that crop down. We're too dry. We've had problems that crop has to get smaller. And as I hear those talks, I'm not an expert. I've never been to South America, and I don't have any insiders down there. But when I hear that talk, I can't help but think about the talk of last summer when we're trying to talk our own crop down, 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 and we end up with a record corn yield when we finally get the assessment done in January. So I'm a little concerned about that. I've seen plenty of talk about this crop getting smaller. Maybe it doesn't.
Hey, thank you much, Ed.
Hey, thank you, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Ed Ussett, agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota. In today's agricultural news, a recent life cycle assessment conducted by Sustainable Solutions Corporation reveals a significant reduction in the U.S. carbon footprint of U.S. soy. Created for the United Soybean Board and the National Oilseed Processors Association, or NOPA, the assessment highlights a notable 22% decrease in the carbon footprint associated with U.S. production of crude soy oil, which is a key feedstock for U.S. biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF. Soybean production and oil processing constitutes more than 40% of the carbon intensity score for soy biodiesel. The improvements are expected to translate into reductions across the clean fuels industry. Clean Fuels Alliance America assisted USB and NOPA in ensuring the data collected for processors in the report aligns with the data specifications for GREET, so it could be easily integrated into the GREET model updates. Veronica Bradley, environmental scientist at Clean Fuels Alliance America, adds, "We look forward to working with the Argonne National Laboratory through the data collected assessment process to update the GREET model to reflect the latest improvements in the industry. GREET is more than likely one of the ways that the United States government will assess the carbon footprints of different biofuels in the future." And finally today, after falling last week, the nation's average price of gasoline climbed 10 cents from a week ago. That according to Gas Buddy. The national average is up 22 cents from a month ago, but 3.2 cents per gallon lower than 1 year ago. The national average diesel price fell 2.7 cents last week and stands at $4.03 a gallon, 33 cents lower than 1 year ago. Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan says the trend is hardly surprising for this time of year and will likely continue as the entire nation has now made the first step toward summer gasoline. Let's return now to an interview that aired last Friday, this one on the important decisions farmers will need to make by the 15th of this month related to crop insurance and ARC and PLC. Those are the USDA Farm Safety Net programs. Nick Paulson is here to discuss some of the particulars and then, of course, to point you back to the FarmDoc site, farmdoc.illinois.edu, where the tools for these decisions can be found. That's different than FarmDoc Daily, but if you get there, you can find the links to both of them. Thank you, Nick, for being here. Let's start with what February looked like. There are two important functions. The last five trading days are the volatility that sets part of the premium price, and the other is what the actual price or average across the whole month of February for the November soybean contract and the December corn contract might have been. Where did those two numbers finish up?
Yeah, so throughout February, we had the harvest contracts is how we refer to those. So the December 24 contract for corn and the November 24 contract for beans. The way that the projected price for crop insurance policies is set is they take the average of the settlement prices on those contracts throughout the month of February. We ended up at 466 for corn, and we ended up, I believe, at 1155 for soybeans. Those are significantly lower than what they were the last couple years. Last year, we were at 591 for corn, so that's a decline of just over 20% on the projected price for corn. And last year on beans, we were at 1376. So I think that's a 16% decline in the bean projected price. There's kind of a good news, bad news story that goes along with that. So on the one hand, we'll have lower premium costs. If you're buying the same policy, same coverage level as last year, you're going to pay less for it. But the bad news side of that is the guarantee that you'll get from that, whether it's a yield protection policy and the number of bushels you're guaranteeing, or it's a revenue policy, the revenue per acre you're guaranteeing is also going to be proportionally lower because of those lower prices.
The volatility factor is developed during the last 5 days. Do you have an idea of how that compared to previous years and what those numbers were this year?
Yeah, so for corn, we ended up at 19%, 0.19 volatility factor compared to 0.18 last year. So that'll have kind of the opposite effect that lower price did. But that, you know, so our premiums won't be 21% lower on corn. They'll be something a little bit less than that lower because that volatility factor kind of works in the other way. There's actually more moving parts than that too. Crop insurance rating is kind of complicated. There's other little changes that happen year to year. But in general, you know, you should see premiums, you know, approaching that 20% lower than the previous year. Soybeans, similar story. The volatility factor went from 0.13 last year to 0.15 this year. So again, that has kind of the opposite effect on premiums. But again, the combined effects of the lower price and the higher volatility should still result in lower premiums than we had last year.
When you wrote the article called First Look at Crop Insurance, you were thinking that farmers, given what you thought prices would be, should probably continue to buy at least what they had in the past, or maybe buy up in the state. Does that matter whether you're in the southern areas or the northern areas and high and low productivity areas, and did it change over the month?
Yeah, I think kind of that advice in that first look earlier in February, I think would pretty much hold. The other challenge we're dealing with here is we've got high production costs based off of the higher price, higher income years we've gone through recently. But now we've got the lower market prices, which is those lower projected prices are a direct result of that. So we do have much tighter margins and some potential negative returns, particularly on rented farmland heading into 2024. And so kind of minimizing costs, looking for ways to cut costs on a per acre basis is going to be a strategy to look at. But I don't think crop insurance is necessarily the place to do that. So, those insurance guarantees for whatever the policy was you bought last year are going to be lower because of that lower price. And so, you could think of taking some of those quote unquote savings from the lower premiums and maybe buying up to higher coverage levels. The challenge with that in central and northern Illinois in particular is that farmers already typically buy very high coverage levels, either at the 80 or 85%. So they can't really move much higher on their individual plans. Southern Illinois, there's a little bit more room in a lot of cases to do that because farmers in that part of the state don't buy as high of individual coverage, but their premiums are also more expensive. As you mentioned, it is a lower productivity area of the state, and it also tends to be a higher risk area, which makes their insurance policies more expensive. So one strategy we're looking at, if you don't have that ability to buy up additional individual coverage, or it's just very expensive to do so, we're just reminding people that there are those supplemental area plans, SCO and ECO, that could be a way to increase the amount of revenue or the amount of yield you're guaranteeing per acre, combine that with your individual plan. And you should be able to do that at a lower cost than increasing that individual coverage level just because those county products are cheaper. The things you got to watch out for there is one, SCO eligibility is tied to your farm program decision. So you got to be in the PLC program if you want to insure those acres with SCO. There's basis risk with those programs. So you may have a loss at the farm level that doesn't translate to county level losses, and vice versa. So those products aren't going to cover you as directly as that underlying individual plan is going to.
Just for clarification point, are you suggesting, and I think you are, that you might look at SCO and ECO, particularly for corn, maybe not for soybeans in the SCO part because of the Arc County decision. You can talk about that in a second. But at the 80 and 85%, or do you drop back the base rate on crop insurance and then cover with SCO and ECO because it's cheaper?
So all those strategies are on the table. Again, I think we kind of hesitate to be too strong in suggesting to back off of what you would typically buy at the individual level and replacing that with that area supplemental coverage. You probably could save some premium dollars, but again, you want to make sure you really understand and think hard about that trade-off between the farm level and the county level coverage and sort of that additional basis risk you take on when you do that. Then again, if you look at your history and you typically kind of tend to follow your county in terms of yields, price side is the same, regardless of the policy you're talking about. So it's really the yields. If you typically follow your county and those county products provide pretty decent coverage, backing off on that individual to save those dollars, replacing it with the county level could be a strategy, but also just adding the supplemental on top of the individual coverage you typically buy would also be a way to think about increasing the amount of revenue or the amount of yield that you're guaranteeing per acre, just given the fact that we've got lower guarantees this year, but still very high costs.
And just one other reminder in the process that if you're using this thinking, especially if it's very tight margins in the fall, while crop insurance pays out in the fall, ECO, SCO don't pay out until yield numbers come out in the month of February, so the next spring with the payments there. So can't count on that as a cash flow situation in the fall. One last thing. The Arc County PLC decision, corn and soybeans, still leaning Arc County for both in general?
Yeah, so we just recently got our online kind of web-based calculator that we partner with the National Center for Supercomputing Applications on campus to put out. That was originally kind of a deal to cover the 18 farm bill, which technically ended last year, but was extended for a year. So we worked with them and got a year for free, so to speak, out of the calculator for everybody. And that'll give you payment estimates, likelihoods, probabilities, chances of payments, as well as expected payment levels. And what we're seeing out of that is, in just a straight up comparison between PLC and Arc County, for corn and wheat, we're seeing a higher chance of payments from Arc County. And related to that, a higher expected payment level coming from those programs as well. We're not talking about huge differences. We're talking about maybe a 1 in 3 chance of a PLC payment being triggered. Again, we're kind of consistent across corn and wheat. And then it varies more across counties for Arc County, because you get the county yield that factors in and the revenue. But somewhere in that 40 to 50% range, 50 would be, very much on the high side. More in the low to mid 40% range in terms of a chance of triggering Arc County this year. And then slightly higher average payment levels because of that higher chance. Soybeans are a little bit different. It's really a toss-up, and it's really a toss-up between two very low likelihoods of either program triggering. So we're looking at a 10% or even a little bit less chance of payments from either program for soybeans. And that's just a function of the fact that even though we've got lower prices, even that lower expectation for the 2024 soybean price, the marketing year average that impacts those programs, it's still above the kind of that reference price for PLC. And then the price levels where we'd be likely to see Arc County payments, there's just still kind of a bigger gap there on soybeans. And so more of a toss-up on soybeans, and again, a toss-up between two options that are probably both equally not super likely at this point.
Thanks much.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Nick Paulson. He's an agricultural economist, a member of the FarmDoc team. If you'd like to find those calculators from the team, you can do that easily enough at farmdoc.illinois.edu. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find our programming to listen to anytime you'd like on our website, on demand at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find this daily program along with our weekly Commodity Week program and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Those three are all actually under the podcast tab. The first two are on the homepage as well, but you'll need to check out that podcast tab to get yourself signed up. Automatically subscribe to them if you'd like to listen to them on a regular basis, as places like Apple Podcast and Google Podcast, along with Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and many, many more. Thank you for taking your time with me today. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.